while Tessa was more on the alternative side. He thought about how Arya's eyes had traveled up and down Tessa's body. Stephen couldn't help but envision both girls wrapped around him, even though he knew that a threesome was probably never going to happen. Things like that happened in porn, but in real life, people became couples and tried to avoid the drama and conflict of multiple sex partners. The waitress, a doleful-eyed woman of 50 with stringy blonde hair, dropped off his plate. He shook off his horniness as best he could and tackled the omelet, hash browns, pancakes, green chili, and coffee with gusto. He'd have to use his credit card, which he hated to do, but money seemed silly to think about at that point. This was their victory meal after their fight to the death with the skinling and his cronies. As he ate, Tessa and Arya chatted about school, the coffee shop, and family life. Tessa's brother had multiple sclerosis, really serious, and she helped him and their mother out a lot with the day-to-day stuff. Arya had grown up in a wealthy family in Mumbai. She referred to her Aerie, which made Stephen remember his dream. An escort, a horde, an Aerie. He was still wrestling to figure out all the new terminology. He took out his phone, got on the restaurant's Wi-Fi, and saw news reports about the fire in South Denver. It took forever. His cell phone was prehistoric. There wasn't any mention of bodies, not a one, and there had been three. The corpse inside might have cooked away to nothing, though he imagined there'd be bones at least, but the two outside should have attracted attention. Tessa knocked him with an elbow and gestured to the mound of plates, empty of the food he'd hoovered down.
"Hungry much?"
"Yeah," Stephen said seriously. "I'm starving. I'm thinking about ordering their breakfast burrito. It's pretty good. And big."
"That would be your fifth breakfast," Tessa said, smiling.
Stephen nodded and drained his fifth cup of coffee. "Yeah, I don't know what's wrong with me." He touched his chest. "I'm hungry, and I have this burning in my chest. It hurt at first, but I'm getting used to it."
Arya frowned. "You were never shown how to handle the animus. If you had been raised as a dragon soul from birth, this all would have been different. We just don't know how this will work in the long run, and there are dangers. From my research, children who are not trained to handle the power die when they transition from human adolescent to dragon soul adult."
A look of worry flashed across her face.
"I'm sorry. I shouldn't have said that so bluntly. I'm sure that won't happen to you."
Arya was funny. She didn't have much of a filter for some things, like death and destruction, but for other things, she'd clam up. Tessa took Stephen's hand and squeezed it out of concern. "I'll be fine," Stephen said, shrugging one shoulder. "Or I hope I will. Maybe whatever we find on the pendant map will help me with this process. My, real parents might have seen this coming. I just wish I knew more about them." That was a difficult thing to consider. His real parents. His whole life, who he was, had suddenly become such a mystery.
"Before we seek out the first fire marker, we should rest," Arya said.
From her purse, she removed a wallet and then an American Express card.
"From here on out, I will be paying for everything. Believe me, my father can afford it, and he hasn't cut me off yet."
Another clue to Arya's situation. Why would her father cut her off? Tessa smiled.
"I was thinking I'd have to shower at a truck stop on I-25, but we'll be staying in style somewhere, won't we, Arya?"
Arya smiled.
"Yes, Tessa," she said. "I believe we will."
The women shared a moment, gazing into each other's eyes. Stephen felt their mutual attraction, and suddenly a world of possibilities seemed to open up for him. Maybe a threesome isn't so far-fetched after all, he thought. Chapter 9. Edgar Vale picked himself up off the back lawn of the house as it exploded in flames. Smoke stank up the air. Sparks and half-burning, swirling pieces of paper settled down on him, but that little bit of fire didn't hurt. He'd just had that foreign dragon bitch blast him full-on with dragon flame. His clothes were nothing but soot. Every bit of his hair was gone, too. He was lucky to be alive, but he was badly burned. He could fix that, though. While the fire engines got to work with their hoses, he slunk away, climbed a fence, limped through another yard, and ducked behind a brick wall as a police cruiser rushed by, lights flashing and sirens wailing. The last thing he wanted was to get taken in by the cops. His prime could fix it all with bribe money and promises of future favors, so that wasn't the problem. The issue was with how his prime saw him. Edgar had fucked up twice. He'd let that weaselly dragonling slip through his hands twice. Mulk would already be furious with him, and if he had to dick around with the local law enforcement, he'd finish roasting Edgar himself. Edgar managed to make it to Broadway without being spotted. The pain was blinding. It was like someone had heated needles up over a stove and then shoved them into every inch of his skin, between his toes, into his taint, through his nipples. Edgar huffed and gasped at the pain, but he had to keep moving. He needed to fix himself before he died. It was early morning and all the legit businesses were closed, but growing up as the son of a hope-to-die alcoholic, Edgar knew how bars worked. For the civilians, 2 a.m. meant going home, but for those bottle soldiers marching toward an early whiskey-soaked grave, 2 a.m. meant going underground. Max's bar, grill, and shithole would still be throwing around drinks to a certain low class of booze hounds. Edgar ran, naked, blackened, and burned, up to the door. The place looked closed. He knew better. He shoved a shoulder into the wood. Using his dragon powers, he broke the lock and staggered inside. The shades were drawn and the place was dark, but it was full of people sitting at stools and congregating around circular tables getting shit-faced. Mostly men, though there were a few glammed-up women who were riding that wrinkly borderline between young slut and old skank. Some big-bellied, big-bearded, good old boy got up to his feet to save the day. Or maybe he'd been looking for a fight all night and finally found one. There was always that kind of drunk, soused and wanting violence. If they could justify it as heroism, fine, but sadism would do just as well. Like a martini with vodka or a martini with gin, both would get you there. "Max's is closed," the big man said. Edgar didn't have time for pleasantries. He shifted his right arm into dragon form, but he was so weak, his chest and head also transformed into his partial appearance. Mulk said his control was iffy, and that was when he wasn't fighting to stay conscious. The big man's eyes widened. "Fucking!" That was the last time the big man would curse. Edgar drove his claw into his chest, squeezed his heart to pulp, then ripped it out and dropped it on the floor. The light of the animus exploded out from the ruined man's body and filled Edgar, repairing his skin and regrowing his beard, healing the damage that foreign bitch had caused him. She thought she could get out of the deal she had with Mulk by joining the escort of another dragon soul male. She was stupid. But then most foreigners were stupid. Stephen Whip was a child. He'd gotten lucky. He would be dead soon, and then Edgar could watch Mulk take that bitch apart. The idea got Edgar hard. And there were no clothes to hide his erection. He let the corpse collapse to the floor. The jagged tips of the big man's ribs poked from his caved-in chest. Edgar turned and showed the skanks his hard-on. The drunks blinked stupidly at the death of their friend. Or maybe they were glad to be rid of the loud-mouthed good old boy. Drunks were as funny as they were antisocial. Edgar stretched and flexed his new skin. His muscles popped, rippled. He was back to being his old self, and there was animus to be had. But first, he needed clothes. He bent and stripped the jeans off the big guy. They'd be baggy, but the guy had a belt. Perfect. He dressed. The barroom was silent, except for the drip, drip, drip of the corpse's blood hitting the floor. Edgar went around to the cash register, broke it open, and collected up a fistful of hundreds. "Any of you fine ladies want to spend the night with a murderer?" Two of the skanks rose to their feet. He knew why. It was partly due to his display of strength and partly because of the money, but mostly it was his dragon powers. He wasn't a full dragon skin yet, and he wouldn't get serious about starting his escort until then. But even now, women were drawn to him. Edgar grinned. There was a trashy motel down the way that catered to drunks, hookers, and druggies. He'd take these two there, get some more animus, get a shower, and then bring in the big guns. Literally. There were ex-Special Forces mercenaries on Mulk's payroll that Edgar had called in. He had positioned them across Colorado in places where he knew this dragonling would go. And if the cold-blooded mercs failed? His prime didn't know it, but Edgar had met some dragon soul Ronans, males without a primacy of their own. He knew at least three that would love to get in Mulk's good graces. Edgar could help with that, provided they helped him first. Together they'd put down Stephen Whip, the foreign bitch, and that other slut, too stupid to know that she was with Stephen not because he was a good guy, but because she didn't have a choice. But first he had to clear their minds. Mulk had taught him the mind-wipe spell for just such occasions. It was how the dragon souls stayed hidden. Edgar splayed out the fingers on his left hand and said the word. His hand burned electric blue. Every straight-up human in the joint would not remember what they'd seen. Edgar laughed and tucked a skank under each arm. He kissed one. She tasted like Jägermeister and puke. He kissed the other, and it was like lapping beer out of an ashtray. Oh, well. He figured other parts of them would taste better. Stephen convinced Arya that just driving by his house in Thornton couldn't hurt, and they could let the morning commuter traffic die down a bit. Like before, Arya drove and Stephen rode shotgun. Tessa, in the back seat, had fallen asleep. Stephen's mom still lived in the lower-middle-class suburban house Stephen had grown up in. The lawn was mostly weeds, the juniper bushes were overgrown, and the paint was peeling off the siding. Sections of the roof filled the gutters. It was the worst house on the block, hands down. Stephen blamed himself. If only he had more time to come over and fix some of the stuff. Or if he had had more money. His mom worked all the time at the airport, but that barely covered her bills. In fact, even though it was before 8 a.m., her beat-up Chevy, 30 years old and still ticking, was gone. The lights in the Robertson's house next door were on, and Dave Robertson was heading out to work in his truck. "Keep driving," he told Arya. He dialed up Kathy Robertson, and she answered with a, "Hi, Stevie." Ugh, he hated when people called him Stevie. He wanted to correct her, but he always felt douchey doing that. Besides, it was the old neighbor lady who had watched him grow up. He could let her slide. The conversation went quick. Stephen asked Mrs. Robertson about his mom. She said she was fine, and the mystery deepened. Why wasn't his mom answering her phone if she was okay? He'd just have to try her at work later. Arya used GPS to thread her way through the neighborhood until she found a way back to I-25 heading north. "Okay," Stephen said. "We need new clothes, a place to rest up, and then we're off to St. Vrain." "There's the Orchard Town Center," Arya said. "Check your phone to see what time the Macy's opens."
My phone's internet is terrible. Like, so slow it's not even worth trying."
"9. I bet it's 9.
Tessa rose and rubbed sleep out of her eyes.
"I hate sleeping in cars. I lived in one for a couple of months. It's terrible. I need a bed, guys. Sorry to be the weak link."
"Not weak at all," Arya said, glancing over one shoulder before returning her eyes to the road.
"You both survived last night? Many wouldn't have."
Turned out the Macy's opened at 10, so they had some time to kill. Arya got coffee from a Starbucks, a full $20 for three people. An utter outrage, but she just used her American Express to pay. It was like magic. Outside, leaning against the Mercedes, Tessa sipped her latte and frowned.
"They got the grind all wrong. This is why you go to local coffee shops, so you don't have muggles making your brew."
"So you're part wizardess, part barista?" Stephen asked, cocking an eyebrow.
"Don't you know it?"
Tessa gently knocked him with a swing of her hip. Stephen excused himself, called in sick to his jobs, and called a friend to take notes for him in his Western Civilization class that afternoon. He couldn't reach his mom directly at work, so he left a message with her boss. That was a good sign, at least. His mom was at work. Still, he really wanted to talk to her directly. He said it was urgent. It was a 50-50 proposition that the distracted supervisor would actually give it to her. How much did his mom know about him, the pendant, and his past? Those were his biggest questions. His biggest concern, though? Was she okay? Had anyone come around to hurt her? Normally, Stephen thought his mom was better off without his dad, but at times like this, he wished she had someone to take care of her, to watch her back. They were the first ones inside the Macy's.
Get whatever you want, Arya directed them. And don't worry about price. We have far more money than time. As long as we're on the move, we should be safe. Don't forget to buy a warm coat, because this is spring in Colorado. Anything can happen. And for the suitcase, don't scrimp. A good bag can last decades.
Stephen had never, ever shopped without worrying about cost. He went to the men's section, and he couldn't help but look at price tags. It all became so real. This stranger he hardly knew was going to buy him a wardrobe and a suitcase to put it in. It was wrong. Surrounded by the expensive clothes in an actual Macy's, he shook his head and remembered the crappy house he'd grown up in. Getting jeans from the local Ross had been a big deal. Mostly he got secondhand clothes from garage sales and thrift stores. It had been fine, he hadn't cared, and having to buy the cheap store brand of mac and cheese seemed like a bigger deal. Did he really need new clothes? He was fine in the used jeans, the old hoodie, and the loud sex guy's Adidas. Maybe it was all just a misunderstanding. Maybe he'd gone insane. He touched the mystic topaz pendant. That was real. He'd seen the map. This was his life now. Okay, he could go to the police. He could tell them about the men who wanted to kill them. He could get them to protect him and his mom. But why hadn't there been any news on the dead men? The men he'd killed. Arya had said something about the Prime owning the cops. Stephen found a pair of jeans that were really cool. He checked the price tag and nearly choked. $100? How could he make Arya spend so much? Arya found him dithering. She had a bag and a pile of clothes in her arms.
Hurry, Stephen. We have to figure out things before Sunday night.
Why Sunday? Stephen asked. Arya glanced away.
I don't know. We just need to hurry. We're all tired and need to rest. If that skinling or another of Mulk's vassals find us compromised, we could get hurt, and people could die. Just buy them.
She rushed off. Yeah, Arya had totally just lied to him. She was involved in this deeper than she was letting on. What would happen on Sunday? Stephen took the jeans off the rack. He sighed. Buying jeans shouldn't be this hard, but it was. For the first time in his life, he was going to accept charity. He was going to get exactly what he wanted, and he wasn't going to care about the price. He needed new clothes for the adventure he found himself on. Arya was rich. The evidence was clear. Exhibit A? Her fucking Mercedes. He didn't look at another price tag. He bought clothes using the mannequins as a model for what might look cool. He grabbed a suitcase, and he met up with Arya and Tessa at the cash register. Tessa had embraced the free fashion. $3,000 later, they were out the door and back in the Mercedes, driving off. They found a Courtyard Marriott, and Arya didn't get them normal rooms, but booked a suite. The amount of money was staggering. They took the elevator up to the top floor. Arya and Tessa went in first. Stephen sighed, standing out in the hallway. This was his life? Macy's and suites and expensive cars? Could he handle it? He wasn't sure. It was like he'd lived his life in a desert, sipping from an old canteen, afraid at any minute he'd die of thirst. And now he was standing in a lake of fresh water. No, not just water. Sparkling water. He strode into the suite. This wasn't a hotel room, it was a small house. Two bedrooms, a main living room, a bathroom the size of the coffee clutch, and when Arya pulled open the curtains, they were given a view of the freeway and the Rocky Mountains in the distance. Everything was new, beautiful, and smelled fresh and clean.
I was so tired in the car, Tessa said. But now, after the coffee and shopping in this room, I'm wired. How can I sleep?
Arya smiled and gently took Tessa's hand.
I know what we can do to help us sleep.
Chapter 10.
Arya stood with Tessa in front of the window that showcased the Rocky Mountains in the distance. The suite wasn't as lush as most of the rooms Arya had stayed in over the years. In India, she had grown accustomed to staying in palaces rented out to dragon souls, and her father had built Ares in the former residences of rich princes. But the room was warm, there was a view, and there was a large bed. It would do. Arya brushed a strand of hair out of Tessa's face. She'd always liked going to the coffee clutch because of this beautiful, witty woman. She loved the way she dressed, how quick she was to laugh and flirt, and how free Tessa seemed. Arya admired her for changing her makeup, changing her outfits, and changing her hair on an almost daily basis. The fact that she had been brought in to Stephen's escort made it all seem inevitable. Of course, they would come together to laugh, to love, to fight. It was destiny. Growing up as a dragon soul, Arya didn't have the same sexual ethics that most people had. She was far more open-minded and had experienced a wide array of lovers. This, though, felt different. It was ironic. Stephen had no idea of the work in front of him. Gathering an escort, acquiring his hoard, and building his Ares. He'd healed his wounds because of the animus he'd gained from the fight and his night-making love to Tessa. Arya knew they'd been at it for hours. That much was clear from their energy. Arya knew the rules even if Stephen and Tessa didn't. If she had sex with Stephen, she would be linked to him forever. For dragon souls, especially young ones, mating created bonds that were extremely hard to break. Stephen's power was off the charts, true, but he was still so innocent, so clueless, so weak. If Arya gave herself to him and he was slain, she'd never recover from the wound. She wasn't ready yet to commit. But she was all too willing to explore the beautiful barista, Tessa Ross. It would relax her like nothing else.
"Can I kiss you?" Arya asked her. "If you don't, I might die," Tessa said breathlessly, eyes wide. Lust radiated off Stephen like a hot wind. She could almost hear him get an erection. Arya drank in Tessa for the first time. She slipped forward and tasted her sweet mouth, breathing in her scent. Their bodies pressed together. Arya was lean and muscled, while Tessa was curvy and pliant. This was a woman Arya could play with for a long time. Maybe even for a lifetime. Their kiss became wilder, more passionate, and Arya felt the thrill of Tessa losing control. The barista grabbed her long hair in a fist. Arya took hold of her ass and pulled her in tighter. Stephen came up and put his hands on their backs. Tessa broke the kiss. She was breathing hard, her eyes were sparkling, and Arya found herself in the same situation, tingling and wet. The barista turned to the dragonling.
"Is this okay, Stephen? It feels right to me, but I know how these things can turn sideways. This won't be my first threesome. We have to talk a lot about everything, or someone is likely to get hurt. Even then, it can still get..."
She faltered.
"Complicated,"
she finished after a moment. Arya studied the woman closely. Part of her attraction to the dragonling was because of his power as a dragon soul, but there was more to it than that. Tessa had true feelings for Stephen, and she was a very sexual person, that was clear. The Indian woman had to smile. Again, it felt like fate had brought the three together. Both women waited for the dragonling to answer Tessa's question. Stephen finally exhaled.
"Tessa, this is every man's fantasy. You both are gorgeous. You both already have given me the best kisses of my life. Doing anything more with the two of you is kind of hard to imagine. It's like me trying to picture heaven after I die."
Tessa squeezed Arya's hand and then moved over to Stephen.
"I want this."
Arya watched the two kiss, man and woman. With her supernatural eyes, she watched the pair trade animus. Tessa's skin glowed a golden hue, and so did the pendant. Normally a dragon soul didn't need any kind of amulet or artifact to help them process animus, but Stephen was different. The pendant seemed to act as a kind of battery, so his cells weren't damaged by the influx of the powerful energy. And Tessa was special. She wasn't a dragon soul, but she was something else. Something not strictly human, though she wasn't sure what. Not yet. The barista gave Stephen's mouth a last lick, and then she pulled back.
"I want this, and I think Arya does too. Arya?"
The Indian woman found herself speechless for a moment. She felt so full of emotion, fear, lust, and love. Already the pull to become part of a dragon soul's escort was nearly overwhelming.
"Stephen, Tessa, I want all three to be together. But I can't have sex with Stephen yet. It's complicated, like you said. Is it okay if I watch, help, kiss you both and get you ready? I'm sorry, it's just... I can't."
Tessa pulled Arya close to Stephen.
"You don't have to explain. Sex is weird and powerful. We'll honor your boundaries. We'll accept how far you want to go. Let's just go to the bed. If I don't come soon, I think I might explode.
Arya found herself laughing. She knew how that felt. They all went to the bed. Tessa stripped off the bedspread and started to undress. Arya took that opportunity to kiss Stephen for the second time. That first time, he'd been uncertain of who he was and what he wanted. It had been a test, and it had triggered the Dragonling to begin his long journey toward ultimate power. This time, Arya touched the stubble on his face. She gazed into his dark eyes. She smelled his scent and the fragrance of his shifting power, hints of orange blossom, musky cedar, and the char of a fresh campfire. She knew when she shifted she gave off a powerful cinnamon spice odor. His scent was utterly unique and made her heart quicken and her breath catch in her lungs. He was stronger now, taller and surer of himself. His hands rested on the swell of her hips. Her hands were around his neck, and she played with the soft hair on the back of his head. Their mouths grew closer until Stephen closed the distance and brushed his lips against hers. The sizzling power of their connection made Arya growl. Had she really made that sound? She wanted this dragon man inside her. She wanted to join his escort and fight by his side until the entire world worshipped them. But no, not yet. She resisted, needing to hold that desire back, at least for now. Tessa was on her knees between them, helping them out of their clothes, pleasuring first Stephen and then Arya. Arya found herself on the bed, her legs spread. While Tessa gave her the gifts of her mouth, Stephen kissed her and held her breast in a gentle hand. The heat of their bodies made her sweat, and then she was falling over the edge and into an ocean of bliss. Animus filled her from the wonder of this man and woman. She felt the familiar flow of power, and she felt her muscles thicken even as they relaxed. Then it was Tessa's turn. She was beyond ready for sex, and when Stephen slipped inside her, she cried out into Arya's mouth. The barista's eyes glowed with a bright light that filled the room. Definitely not human, but what? Another mystery Arya would delight in exploring.
"My chest, Arya," Tessa gasped. "I get so turned on."
The Indian woman gave her a last kiss and then moved to her breasts. Stephen had quickened his pace. Arya reached down and felt where they were connected. A gentle touch and Tessa was coming. Not a second later, Stephen sank deep inside the woman, stiffened, and let out a cry. Then all three were kissing and laughing in the light of the glowing pendant. Stephen's hands felt so wonderful on Arya's skin, as did Tessa's. They curled up together and fell fast asleep. Arya knew that fighting her desire for Stephen was futile, but before she could give herself fully to him, she needed to know more. She needed to know that, in the end, he was a dragon soul worth dying for. While Tessa might be able to leave his escort, being dragon soul, Arya couldn't. Dragon souls mated for life. Stephen woke up and felt like he was overheating. Sleeping between two women, one a fire-breathing dragon no less, was a sweaty proposition. They hadn't set a specific time, but he wanted to get to the mysterious destination before dark. It was late afternoon and the light was fading in the curtains. He pulled himself off the bed and immediately felt cooler, but not comfortable. The burning sensation still filled his chest. It was like someone had shoved a kerosene heater between his lungs. Every breath made the heater burn brighter, and it felt like his heart was smoldering. He didn't know how, but he knew the pendant was helping him. Without it, he might have already cooked from the inside out. Water. He needed water. He went and grabbed the big bottle of mineral water from the fridge and drank the entire liter. Then he saw the price tag. Shit, it was $10 fucking. Why would anyone on Earth spend $10 when water from the tap was free? Rich people were crazy. Definitely. After he'd guzzled down the water, hunger hit him. Eating from the minibar would bankrupt them. No, that wasn't right. Arya said money wasn't a problem. She was swiping her American Express card like it was directly connected to Fort Knox. Either way, Stephen couldn't stop himself. While what he really wanted was steak, he'd settle for the huge Snickers bar and the trail mix with chocolate-covered almonds. Fancy. He'd eaten half the minibar before he realized it. There went another $200. Shit. At the window, he stood and watched the sun drifting toward the tops of the mountain peaks. I-25 was a river of traffic. They might see him in the window, naked as he was, but he didn't care. Just like he didn't really care about the three men he'd killed earlier that day. How could he be so callous? And he'd just had a threesome with his two crushes. It had seemed so normal, though. It was like he could anticipate what they wanted and how it would work out, and he'd been just fine when Arya said she wasn't ready for sex with him just yet. It felt right. Should it? Stephen crunched through the trail mix, thinking. He realized he'd held himself in check his entire life. He'd had to. Being a poor kid, the son of a single mother, every one of his actions had consequences, not just for him, but also for his mom. Get in a fight at school? His mom would have to leave work early to pick him up. There went money for groceries. Get a girl pregnant? That would mean bills and added responsibility for his mom. Even with that bully bud from the coffee shop, Stephen had held back because he hadn't wanted to lose that job. When you're working every minute of your life, you want to keep things simple. Be a good guy, follow the rules, act like society wants you to, and things flow a lot more smoothly. And once you're used to holding back, acting out, going for what you want, and breaking rules, all get harder to do. When those guys tried to murder him, all of society's rules had gone out the window. It was kill or be killed. And he'd had to protect Tessa. Those guys would have killed her as well. The lizard-masked man had shot at her first. Those fuckers deserved to die. Stephen felt rage fill him. He relived the battle, and he felt how wrong it was for them to try and take his life, especially now that he had something to live for. So that explained the violence. As for the sex, Arya had started the threesome. Tessa had dived in with both feet, and who was Stephen to ruin anyone's good time? The time for playing it safe was over. Holding back now just might get him and his girlfriends killed. He found himself holding the pendant. It was warm, glowing, filled with animus. He thought about the map, and that triggered it. He saw the flames flickering by the St. Vrain River, not that far away. He saw himself southwest of the fire. His icon was a black dragon. That was his birthright, maybe from his father, maybe not. Could he really become a dragon? Only one way to find out. He went into the bathroom and gazed into the mirror. It was time to unleash the beast. Chapter 11. Stephen went into the spacious bathroom and gazed into the mirror. Normal guy, dark hair, gray eyes, just his own face that he didn't really think about. The burning power inside him flared, and he wished he had an antacid or an ocean of milk to soothe the burn. Were those flames building so he could breathe fire? Or did it have something to do with the animus he'd collected while having sex with Tessa and Arya? He sighed. He'd only been in this mixed-up world for a few days, and already all the damn questions were getting old. Concentrating, he pulled up the dragon-shaped skill tree, and again it appeared blurry in his vision. Wavering, indistinct. It was getting easier to access it, but it was still far from being a crisp image. He could see the skill markers, but he couldn't focus on them enough to read what they were. It didn't matter, though. He knew what he wanted. He gritted his teeth. The animus absorption skill had been the first skill he'd managed to unlock, triggered when Arya had kissed him. The memory of that kiss still got him excited. No, no time for that. He had to focus. During his throwdown with the skinling, he'd somehow unlocked a second ability called Partial Transformation. In his mind, he replayed the battle, envisioning his arm, thick with muscle, covered in black scales, fingers capped by wicked talons. If he were going to tangle with the skinling and his ilk again, he needed to be able to transform more than just an arm. He stared at the skill tree and intuitively seemed to understand that the neck and head of the tree represented his transformations. He focused on the second circle on the neck of the dragon, gazed like a laser, as he pumped his plentiful supply of animus into the glowing orb. The animus bar plunged, and a new tag flickered and appeared on his skill tree. Homo Draconis. The results were immediate and painful. His arms scaled over and thickened. 3-inch black talons sprouted from his reptilian hands. This was not so different from the partial transformation he'd mastered during his fight with the goons, but the changes didn't end there. Oh no. Black scales emerged from his stomach. He wanted to scratch his skin off completely as the itching overtook him, but with his razor-sharp claws, he'd have shredded his body. Agony assailed him. His bones, creaking, cracking, twisting, grew. His joints popped as they expanded. Stephen gasped. It felt like someone had taken a hammer to the inside of his skull. His mouth elongated and slits appeared where his nostrils had been. He stretched his new jaws and found he had rows of jagged fangs. He lashed out with a forked tongue. Holy shit, he had the snout of a fucking dragon. His eyes gleamed. The stink of orange blossoms and campfire became overpowering, like someone was burning down a Florida orchard. His tail burst from his spine and he smacked the wall with it. He'd grown at least 2 feet, now just under 8 feet, and he had to crouch to keep from bashing into the ceiling. He lifted a clawed foot at the bottom of a powerful leg. Half human, half dragon, he was wingless. But damn, he had claws, fangs, and a tail, and he knew he was stronger. It felt like he could easily break through walls or upend a car if the need called for it. He glanced back to the skill tree, still hovering before him, and noticed that keeping this form burned through his available supply of animus. He could feel it draining from him by the second. Tessa screamed from the doorway, naked except for his hoodie. When Stephen turned, she backed away into the main room. Stephen tromped toward her. He had to be careful as he slipped out of the bathroom. He towered over Tessa. Arya rushed out of the bedroom, pistol in one hand, broadsword in the other, totally naked.
"What is happening?"
Tessa backed up, hit the coffee table, and landed on her butt. She pointed.
"That. It. Thing. There."
Her wide eyes radiated fear, her mouth trembled, her fingers shook like a leaf in a stiff breeze.
"That it is our Stephen?"
Arya walked up to him and put a hand on his massive, scaled arm.
"So, you have already mastered your partial form and moved on to bigger and better things. Very impressive. Would you like to see my Homo Draconis?"
She arched an eyebrow.
"Yes, I would like to see,"
Stephen said in a loud, rough whisper. Talking was hard, but he could manage it. His vocal cords had changed in the process, but the bigger issue was his mouth. The new tongue, fangs, and lips made communicating difficult, to say the least. Arya put the gun and sword next to the TV. She raised her arms, and the smell of cinnamon mixed with that of orange blossoms floating in the air. Red scales flipped over themselves, covering her body as she grew bigger, taller. It was a good thing they had a suite, because a normal hotel room with normal ceilings would never accommodate both of their draconian bodies. Arya, too, had black claws, striking against her crimson scales. Her small breasts all but disappeared into the muscles of her chest. She was a little more than half his size and far more slender. She touched his arm and growled.
"Your appearance improves as you near your true shape, Stephen,"
she hissed. Her words came slowly, but she could talk far better than he could. Stephen imagined what Tessa was seeing. Two giant dragon people, one huge and black, the other smaller and colored, a striking firestorm red. Unfortunately, Stephen's animus was running out. Holding the Homo Draconis shape was taxing him, and his reservoirs of the energy weren't as deep as Arya's. Perhaps as he gained levels, that would change. With a gasp, he changed back to being human, the scales and claws drawing into his body as his limbs shrunk. He fell to his hands and knees, trying to catch his breath. Arya, still half-dragon, crouched next to him and traced her claws up and down his back. They felt so good, easing the terrible itching. There was less pain from his bones reshaping, and he could see how he could get used to it in time. He glanced up and gazed into Arya's bright green eyes. Somehow, she managed a very lizard-like smile.
"You are stronger than I thought."
She changed back into her human shape. The effects were almost immediate. claws retracted into fingernails, skin replaced scales, and hair grew over her head as her face flattened until she regained her human beauty. She continued to caress his back.
"You are doing well, Stephen. I can't imagine what you are feeling. I spent my entire life growing accustomed to the animus and using it to change my shape. As children, our kind derive animus from our parents, through their love and caring, though only in small doses. It's not until we can fight and mate that we truly seize power."
Her eyes flashed as she spoke. Stephen rose and took Arya in his arms and kissed her. The electricity between them sparked up at once, and her energy filled him. But it wasn't going to be good enough. He'd depleted himself, and there was only one surefire way to get more back without any enemies to face. Stephen picked her up and took her to the bed. He kissed her as he laid her on the bed. He found himself between her legs, brushing his sex against hers. He wanted her. But Arya stopped him.
"Not yet, Stephen. I can't. Not with you. Well, not until..."
She trailed off, face flushed. Instead, she slid down, kissing her way down his chest and belly. On her back, with him over her, she took his stiff member inside her warm, wet mouth. Tessa came around and got on the bed with them. Kissing Stephen, touching him, she gave him her animus as well. Stephen's hands drifted down Tessa's body to the patch of hair between her legs. She was soft and wet there. Tessa in front of him, Arya under him, Stephen never had a chance. Both the women pushed him over the edge. The pendant glowed as, breathing hard, his mind whirling from the intense pleasure, he collected more animus from their sexual energy. Both of the women were hot as well, so Stephen gave up on leaving the hotel room right away. He had to take care of their needs, first Arya's, then Tessa's. After more sex and showers, they dressed in their new clothes. Stephen felt clean and powerful, and he buzzed with curiosity. He was close to finding the first clue about who he truly was and where he'd come from. To the west, the peaks of the Rocky Mountains touched the sun as it slowly set, leaving a chill. Luckily, they had bought warm coats at Macy's. Arya wore another colorful dress, but accented it with a black camisole and a leather jacket. Tessa was in ripped, blinged-out jeans, boots that came up to her knees, and a black sweater with one sleeve longer than the other. As for Stephen, he wore jeans and a white linen shirt, just like the man from his dream. Arya drove like she wanted to outrun the sunbeams that gave the passing farms and fields a soft glow. They buzzed down a back road, and the Indian woman deftly avoided potholes and passed the few cars on the road. The narrow strip of asphalt ran parallel to the shining waters of the St. Vrain River. Tessa, in the back, chattered nervously about this and that, mostly about the fact that she couldn't believe that dragon people existed, and, maybe even more importantly, that she was having sex with them. Stephen could understand. It blew his mind as well. He had to concentrate, though, on the pendant map. It glowed in front of them. His black dragon icon drew closer and closer to the flames burning next to the river. Stephen tried his mother again. Most likely, her supervisor hadn't given her his message. The home phone rang and rang, but no one picked up. Damn it. His nagging worry was turning into cold fear.
"We should expect trouble," Arya said during one of Tessa's lulls. "Whoever is trying to kill you will only be upping the ante. They might not know where we are, but then again, they might. So keep your heads about you."
"Roger that, General," Tessa said nervously. "I'm not really the fighting type, but I can warn you guys if I see anything."
Then she went quiet for so long, Stephen turned and made sure she was okay.
"Are you good?" he asked.
She nodded, chewing on a fingernail.
"Yeah, I just... you guys know what you are, but me, what am I? I can feel the animus in me, and when we have sex, my eyes glow. I'm kind of torn. Part of me wants to be normal so I can go back to a regular life when this is all over. But then, maybe some part of me wants to be special, too."
"You are not simply human,"
Arya said in confirmation of Tessa's suspicions.
"I expect all of our questions will be answered in time." "Ah, we've arrived at last,"
she pointed. A tower rose from yellow fields of dead grasses and the ancient cottonwoods hugging the banks of the St. Vrain River. Arya turned and drove to a gate at the end of a weedy dirt driveway. All of them got out. Their boots crunched on the gravel. They smelled cold sage and the dank odor of the riverbank. The wrought iron gate was as rusted as it was ornate. Spiderwebs, old and new, covered the scrolling metal. The gate was attached to a thick cinderblock wall topped with razor wire. The grounds around the tower had become a tangle of undergrowth, though at one time they would have been beautiful. Lost in the grasses, weeds, and sagebrush were dry fountains and crumbling retaining walls. The round citadel dwarfed most of the bare-limbed cottonwoods around it. Three trees, however, stood taller. The fortress was 6 stories at least, and was mostly concrete. But near the top were the remains of stained glass windows, most broken, though a few were still intact. The very top of the tower was flat, but had 4 animal heads carved out of marble facing the 4 cardinal directions. "Marble and stained glass?" Stephen asked in wonder. "Who in the hell lived here?"
"Yeah, if this is a grain elevator, it's the fanciest fucking grain elevator in all of creation," Tessa agreed with a bob of her head.
"It's an airy," Arya whispered.
A chill wind blew and she grasped her coat tighter around her. Then she drew her pistol, disengaged the safety and quickly checked the chamber for a round. Cool, practiced, efficient. Stephen gripped the broadsword in a sweating fist. He pointed to a sign on the front gate obscured with weeds. He went forward and used the blade to clear off the yellow and gray tangle. A single word in the scrollwork made him shiver. Dracarys. Chapter 12. The sun was gone, the wind was cold, the light was gray and growing dimmer. Stephen pointed at the word.
"What does this mean, Arya?"
"In my dream, my vision, I guess it was, I heard a name. Stefan Dracarys."
Arya stepped forward, frowning.
"It's an old dragon soul family, now gone. I remember the name Dracarys from my studies, but I can't recall specifics. The Dracarys lineage had a grand tradition, like the Tudors in England or the Medicis in Italy. The last of the Dracarys clan died out mysteriously."
She paused, gaze flashing toward him.
"None remain."
A sadness filled Stephen, and he wasn't sure why. Imagining his dad as some kind of king made him smile. Joe Whip was a lot of things, gambler, asshole, absentee father, but he wasn't royalty. As for Stephen's mom, Florence Whip? Yeah, Joe and Flo Whip, not exactly the stuff legends were made of. Thick chains kept the gates closed, blocking their way. Tessa stepped forward and picked up the giant lock in a small hand, her chipped and chewed fingernails painted black.
"So I'm guessing neither of you have a key?"
"I can help with that."
Arya raised her muscular arm, her skin became scales and her fingernails claws. A dark energy surrounded her hand as she brought her 3-inch talons down through the lock. She ripped the lock into pieces that tumbled to the dirt. Normal claws wouldn't have been able to do that, but that shadow energy had imbued her with a powerful force. Arya grinned.
"Soon you will master your skills, Stephen, and you will be able to do that. That and more."
Stephen blinked.
"Come on, my dragony friends,"
Tessa said, pushing the gate open. The hinges creaked loudly in the chill hush of twilight. "Friends or lovers?" Stephen asked, a quirk of a smile on his lips.
"My dragon lovers," Arya rolled her eyes. "Sounds like a bad erotica novel."
"An awesome erotica novel," Tessa protested. The 3 stopped bantering as they walked through the gates and past the sage and weeds of the courtyard. Huge double doors blocked their way into the tower. Big iron rings hung from fittings in the central panels, and the entrance would have felt at home protecting a Bavarian castle. What was such a fortress doing in the boonies of Colorado? Arya tried her shadowy claw trick again, but her nails only left deep scars in the wood.
The place is magically protected.
She squinted her eyes as she studied the door. Stephen fished the pendant out of his shirt and held it aloft. A click echoed through the courtyard. Bolts slid from behind the wood, and the doors creaked open on rusted hinges, revealing the darkness of the hallway beyond. It felt like a haunted house ride at an amusement park. Classic and creepy. Stephen gulped. The whole place had gone quiet. No birds, no wind, a preternatural hush surrounded them. He gripped the broadsword tighter. "Don't suppose you brought a flashlight," he said.
"As a matter of fact, I did."
Aria reached into her coat and came out with a mini maglight. She clicked it on and the beam cut through the gloom, showing granite tiles dusty with time. This was it. This was the next stop on his grand adventure. And fortunately, no one was trying to kill him. Yet. He stepped in, breathing hard. Sweat dripped off his face. Lights winked on. Not torches, light bulbs. The hallway led to a round living room with a kitchen off to the side and a bathroom. The place had furniture, a big sectional sofa, dark wood bookcases, a dining room set with 12 chairs around a mahogany table. But everything was slashed apart, the books ripped open like dead birds, the walls burned. One section of bookcases was melted as if someone had splashed it with acid. Skeletons, long moldered away, lay on their stomachs, arms outstretched, as if they were trying to crawl to safety. The place was in ruins, the leftovers of a battle, decades old.
"What happened here?" Tessa squeaked.
"The downfall of the American Dracaris primacy, it looks like," Aria replied in a whisper. "Though in the histories I read, the Dracaris dragon souls preferred to be Ronans. A few had primacies, but they were a clan more interested in sorcery than conquest."
Stephen cupped a hand around his mouth and called out,
"Stefan Dracaris! Stefan Dracaris! Are you here?"
Nothing answered them, though ceiling lights above the stone staircase winked on, spiraling upwards. Stephen's pendant radiated light and heat. It grew so hot that Stephen had to keep it off his skin.
"Looks like we go up," Tessa said.
She put a foot on the first step, then retreated behind Stephen.
Dragon souls go first, baristas go last, so we're around to make coffee at the funerals."
Stephen laughed at that one. Even though the place gave him the creeps, he couldn't stop now, and he wasn't going to let Aria go first. While she had her secrets, he didn't think this was about her. No, this was about him and his past. And his future. The second, third, and fourth floors were bedrooms and bathrooms and pantries with small kitchenettes connected to them, all as sumptuous as the suite they were staying in at the Marriott. But like the living room below, these rooms were torn to pieces. A wide brown stain marked one Persian carpet under a small skeleton, probably the remains of a woman, given the size of the body. And that stain? That stain was long congealed blood, without a doubt. The sixth level had been a library with two studies attached to it. The bookcases were bare, the papers scattered and mixed with leaves. The stained glass windows were only jagged bits of glass in the window frames. More of the acid had eaten away the stone walls. A desk lay like a barbecue briquette in the middle of a burned-out study. Dragonfire, certainly. As they walked up through the levels of the tower, lights flashed on as if by magic. Or maybe they were connected to motion detectors, which was probably more realistic. Then again, his sense of what was realistic had changed drastically in the last couple of days. The lights of the library were small, recessed bulbs scattered in a pattern across the ceiling, but not a pattern Stephen recognized. A lopsided polygon led to a line that circled around the ceiling, but not in a spiral. The line of lights just kind of meandered. He'd hoped to find answers in the tower, but they'd explored every room, and all they had found was the signs of a violent struggle that had taken the lives of dozens of people decades ago. Standing by the barbecued desk, Stephen turned to Aria. "There's nothing here." He pulled up the map, and his black dragon icon was standing right in the middle of the flames by the St. Vrain River. He pointed. "See? I'm right here. Maybe my real parents just wanted me to see where they were killed. He paused, taking a long look around. Maybe we should just go. Tessa screwed up her face.
Dude, give up much? Haven't you seen National Treasure, or like any movie ever? No, it's going to be a puzzle. We just have to figure it out.
Aria walked under the pattern of the ceiling lights.
Wait, that's a constellation. Draco.
Tessa sighed. I wish I knew my stars, that would be so cool.
Did it take you long to memorize the night sky, Aria?
The dragon soul smiled impishly.
I hardly know the sky, but as a dragon we are required to at least know that one constellation.
An idea hit Stephen between the eyes. We're not done yet. The top of the tower. We have to get to the top. They went back to the staircase, but there seemed to be no way up. They returned to the damaged library.
I bet you $1,000,000 there's a secret door, Tessa said. We just have to trigger it.
Stephen walked quickly to the only bookcase that hadn't been destroyed. The carpet had long burned away, revealing a scorched hardwood floor covered with leaves. He brushed some of the debris away with his boot, and he saw a half circle marked into the floor. It was from the bookcase swinging out. But how to activate it? A metal sconce for a candle jutted out from the stone. He and Tessa exchanged glances.
You don't think...
she started.
Well, I've seen that movie, Stephen said. Or was it a Scooby-Doo episode?
Either way, he pulled the sconce down. A mechanism behind the wall groaned, and the bookcase swung open, revealing a set of stone stairs leading upward. Tessa suppressed a giggle.
Can I just say that this is the greatest moment of my life? We found a secret passageway.
Total cliche, Stephen said. The candle holder? The bookcase? Duh.
Lucky for us it was a cliche, Aria said. I would not want to be here all night trying to find a way to the top of the tower. I would imagine we have a more difficult puzzle ahead of us. We do not have any idea of why we are here or what we are looking for.
I think we'll know when we find it. Stephen started up the stone steps. The passageway was narrow, but thankfully short. They came out of a doorway and found themselves on the flat top of the tower. A 4-foot parapet wall ran around the roof, and the marble creatures he'd seen from below each sat in their own corner. Up close, even in the dark, Stephen could see what the animals were. There was a dragon, of course, a kind of wolf creature, an eagle with its wings back, and a cat with one paw out as if to scratch someone. Each statue was about 5 feet wide and 10 feet long and extended outward from the wall. Each had a door in the back. They'd come out of the dragon door. His pendant glowed, giving them light so they didn't need Arya's maglight. Stephen headed across the tower and tried the other doors. Each was made of heavy wood with a brass handle, tarnished and weather-worn.
Do you think there are other secret passageways? Stephen asked.
Tessa shrugged. Could be, but I think this is where we need to be.
Eyes glittering, Aria nodded but didn't say anything. Her face was serious. Night had fallen. In the distance they heard a car whoosh by on the highway. Mostly, though, all they could hear was the St. Vrain River trickling, running shallow since it was only early April and the snow in the Rockies hadn't melted that much. Another car rushed by. This one seemed to stop, or at least slow down. They went to the edge of the tower and looked down. Stephen expected to see police cruisers or black government Humvees or a truckload of thugs with broadswords. But all they saw was Arya's car in the driveway. Lots of grass and sage and an empty road. The vehicle must have kept on going. Stephen turned and walked to the middle of the rooftop. Tiles made up a mosaic, but the sun, rain, and snow had washed out their colors.
Maybe that was the key.
If so, that clue was so gone. He took the pendant off and held it up. Then he saw it, sparkling on the floor. Certain tiles in the mosaic gleamed in a polygon connected to a meandering line.
Draco, the constellation.
Look,
Tessa called out. She was pointing up at the sky. The constellation of Draco, in the northern night sky, was shining brightly. It was next to the Big Dipper. Stephen knew that one, at least. The mystic topaz pendant glowed so much it was like a second sun on the Dracaris fortress. Shadows around the cottonwoods lengthened, and yet something was different. The night sky shimmered like it was a pool of water with diamonds shining in its depths, but all other stars were dim compared to the Draco constellation. So close. The liquid night seemed close enough Stephen could touch it.